And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, Blake. I was telling you before the show, I was getting distracted. The Next Round Live posted this really great graphic that was about the teams that would have made the 2014 playoff if it had existed since 2014. And my attention is still distracted by it because I was sitting here trying to figure out, I counted 15 of 16 SEC teams that would have made it since 2014. And I can't find who the missing 16th team is. That's probably one of the worst opens I've given you.
Are you 1,000% sure that a team has been left out?
I keep looking at this. Like, I can't remove my focus from this because I don't know how I missed it.
How did you come down to 15?
All right, I'm gonna read through them and we can sit here and count together.
All right, Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia. Would have for sure.
Wait. Let me read off the graphics so it makes a little more sense.
Is it Auburn?
No, Auburn has four.
Okay.
Wait, let me read and we'll count them here. Okay.
Okay.
Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma. We're counting the teams that are now in the conference, by the way. I don't want to hear anyone say, oh, well, they were in the Big 12 when they made most of this. Forget
well,
that.
Well, you could make two with Washington, so, and Oregon.
And USC and UCLA.
Right.
Okay. LSU is four. Ole Miss is five. Texas is six. Florida is seven. Tennessee is eight. Mississippi State is nine. Missouri is 10. Auburn is 11. Texas A&M is 12. I'm trying to see who I'm missing here. Texas A&M still going. Kentucky is 13. We are still going.
Vanderbilt would have been in last.
Vanderbilt is 14. Arkansas is 15. So I don't know who the missing team is. Are there not 16 teams in the SEC? Like what am I? I'm
Missouri.
Who would not have made it?
You didn't.
No, I said Missouri.
Okay. Chat, tell Joe before he has so he can OCD moment. Joe is very much in an OCD moment. Who did Joe DeLeon miss?
Someone's gonna tell me. But it fuels the whole thing. We got clipped by Texas. Somebody.
Yeah, he said Texas, but continue.
We got clipped by somebody, and I didn't totally agree with what you were saying, but people keep trying to criticize us for saying that the SEC would dominate the field when in reality that they take up most of the back end of the top 25. Most four-loss SEC teams make up most of the back end of the top 25 because their resumes are good enough. So like this supports the case.
Even if it's 15 out of 16, even if it's 82-72, you mentioned Florida, you mentioned South Carolina, you mentioned Missouri. Tony Petitti might be smiling because he said that there'd be more access. Now, I got in a conversation with Bud Elliott today in reference to this, okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with anything really that he said. But we did get clipped, okay? So I went to this gentleman's YouTube channel and I asked him. I was like, well, then bring me on to debate then. But here's my question. Where's the lie? Someone please tell me where the lie is. So regardless of if you think I'm an SEC homer or not, mm-hmm. I have said that the Big Ten on top is bigger. What I've disagreed with and where I'm coming from is that the Big Ten is pushing the 2014 playoffs so that, number one, for more money and TV rights for their partners, but number two, so they get more teams in. I mean, it's not that difficult to understand. Like, I keep hearing people say, well, we'll have more competitive games. Really? Really, Big Ten? More competitive than Ohio State and Indiana in your conference championship game last year? You mean to tell me that Notre Dame versus Houston is more competitive than Ohio State versus Indiana? That's what you're trying to convince me of taking away conference championship games, expanding this. By the way, Miami plays Iowa. Iowa could barely get past the 50-yard line in some games. And again, yeah. You're trying to argue me this. I'm asking where the lie is. So as this continues to be what seems a North-South issue, because and I thought one of the commenters on Monday, Joe, to your point, saying, Blake, everybody's making this an SEC Big Ten thing. Well, their comment was, well, Joe, the truth of it is, Greg Sankey's the one not accepting it, and he has the 50% power to not accept it. Now, I do think spring meetings for the SEC next week gets very interesting to see what coaches and ADs and the SEC want to do here. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they want 16, because why would you go to 24 if you're them to give more money to the Big Ten? But I just say this to say, this isn't an attack on the Big Ten. I have been more vocal, and please, have you seen any rant that I've gone on Greg Sankey and calling him out? I've been the one from a national media perspective calling him out by name more than anybody. So what I'm saying is if you continue to push it, I'm going to come with facts just like you came with facts. There's more SEC teams that would have been in. Joe, there's more teams that would have been in the last 2 years than the Big Ten. It's not debatable, guys. Like, you can be calling me an SEC homer. How do you lie with the facts? And that's what I brought up to Bud today. Bud, you can't argue that. Now, his point, too, and Joe, I know we don't really want to get to Tony Petitti, and we'll talk about the Big Ten meetings in the end. You know what comment bothered me the most about all of this? Was that it gives more money and access to teams when they make the playoff. Okay, stop. Tennessee had a playoff patch, and their donations from donors stayed the same. It actually reduced. So they made the playoff after two decades worth of not being relevant in the sport, where in the 80s and 90s, they were dominant under Philip Fulmer, and putting a playoff patch on them did what exactly? It did nothing. It did nothing. Because when they went in the portal and when they went through high school recruiting, guess what the Blue Bloods did? Guess what the Blue Bloods did? You ready for it? They took the top recruits. So, that's the thing for me. Oh, it gives everybody more parity and access. No, it won't, because those big teams will still spend more money than you.
Okay, so my big thing with this, I have not been on the end of believing that this is, you know, there's like evidence to support, and I didn't do all this digging to support that the SEC has an imbalance over the Big Ten and whatnot. The way that I was looking at this, and the reason why I spent the time to sit here and count up, I was looking off of the Next Round Lives graphic and trying to like map out, okay, what's the separation? I stand by what I brought up on Monday's show, which was, I think that a lot of the talking points that the Big Ten brings up and their motivation is not the truth. I really think that you keep hearing in some of this belief that, oh, it would allow for more access and the Big Ten is equally as competitive. That's not true. There has been a higher percentage of SEC teams that have made appearances compared to the new field of Big Ten teams. There are Big Ten teams that are never going to sniff the playoff. It's just not. Maryland, Rutgers, those teams are not going to, they're not going to touch the CFP. They're just have zero. They're not motivated. They don't have the financial backing. They don't have the alumni base. They don't. The quote from, and this is kind of, we were going to talk about it at the end, but the quote from Petitti that really pissed me off and also revealed why their intentions are not what they say that they are. They say that their intentions are to improve the opportunities for various programs in order to put more money in their pockets. And then also the main thing is it would create a more competitive season. The end of the season would be more competitive. His quote was, when I was at Major League Baseball, that is the immediate red flag. We never had to convince anybody that keeping more teams in the race is better for everybody and the fans. Like, we never had to do that. I feel like in the space, like, we're kind of being asked to do that. It's almost counterintuitive. I think that more teams alive as late as possible is a fundamental way that I thought about it when we were changing the playoff schedule. Blake,
you know what the biggest that doesn't happen.
Yes, but, well, right. for the most part, there's a pretty clear separation between the teams that are in it and that are out of it. It really separates because there's a draft. So like the teams that are out of it, they're really out of it. They completely sell their teams. But I really contend that the networks are the ones who are influencing all this. We can sit here and get mad at the SEC and the Big Ten. We could sit here and yell about this, but there are two sides right now. Fox wants playoff games. The ESPN does not want to relinquish the fact that they own the entirety of the playoff. That's where we sit. That's where we stand. That's how this whole thing's working right now. Every argument that's getting brought up is a distraction to me.
Well, see, here's to and we're going to end this because I am so done with talking about this.
I agree.
Okay, but here's the two main talking points coming out of the Big Ten. It gives more money for other schools, and it gives them more inclusion and access. Oh, really? Oh, really? Tennessee? I mean, Arizona State? Boise State? I mean, do you want me to continue? I mean, those teams, Tennessee, I mean, those teams made the first 12-team playoff and got more money, and nothing happened. Nothing happened. So, what specific part are you wanting to talk about here? Here is the truth. The teams that get the best players, will win majority of the time. The best teams are normally winning. That's why Ohio State won. And you can make the argument, well, that's why you needed a playoff. Joe, I am so sick and tired. And another thing that Petitti said to add on to this, he keeps bringing up professional sports. The thing that bothers me about Petitti's message when he talks about expansion, how do you not know that you're not a professional sport? How do you not know? Because maybe I'm just dumb, but the NFL model is that the worst team gets the number one overall player as a pick. The number one overall player went where this year in recruiting, Joe? Lamar Brown went to LSU. I would consider, since 2000, LSU to be a current age blue blood. LSU had a horrible season. Sure. But at the same time, LSU has done a lot over the last two and a half decades. You have guys like Jeremiah Smith still going to Ohio State. You still have the top end teams dominating recruiting. You know who I didn't see? I didn't see SMU. I didn't see Tennessee. I didn't see Boise State. I didn't see Iowa. I didn't see Vanderbilt, other than the Jared Curtis move. Holistically speaking, they did not do that. They went after a quarterback. The only team that you can make the argument for is Texas Tech. And even in that, the money is being spent like they're a massive P4 program. But, Joe, they just got to the playoffs and got blanked. They just got blanked. And my argument has got to be and will continue to be, there's no reduction of the 12-team playoff. But you keep coming up with these talking points. This is not a professional league. The top players are still going to the top places that are paying them top dollar. So until you want, there is no collective bargaining to be able to do that. There never will be when it comes to recruiting. You can't tell a kid where he can and can't go to college. So I don't think that he understands. So which verifies your point. This is nothing but TV, and I got to be real with you. I'm done with it. Unless the SEC comes out next week,
oh, dude, they're going to
meetings and says, well, Joe, they're good. This is, hold on. Okay. Sources. Hold on. I talked to an SEC. I'm going to be very vague. I spoke with an SEC coach today. There are talking points that are already being sent out about the SEC meetings. The 2014 playoff is on the number 1A, 1B on the agenda. So you're going to talk about it next week. So you better be prepared for it. I don't think the SEC is going to get there. I don't, because they don't want to give the upper hand to the Big Ten. Joe, they're going to sit at 16. They're going to stay there. And if it makes them stay at 12, they're going to stay at 12. But the number one talking point coming out of spring meetings in the SEC next week, I promise you, We're going to sit here next Wednesday, and this is going to be the topic of conversation, I promise. It's going to be the 24 versus 16 or 12 team playoff.
Yeah, we're going to bring it up again. I wanted to just bring up, before we move on here, a thought that I had. Seeing there is a Indiana commenter in the chat, and it made me think of this. Like, the Big Ten is the advocate for the 2014 playoff. Yet the Big Ten has the best example of why the 2014 playoff should not exist. And rather, teams should earn their success. Teams should earn their growth. You are handing out participation trophies for teams to get trounced in the playoff, to get bounced after one or two games to the likes of Northwestern and Arizona, or not Arizona, Northwestern and Minnesota, teams that maybe would have been competitive enough to be there and to have fought with one another and put together a good game towards the middle of the pack of the Big Ten, but not good enough to go toe-to-toe with the actual national title contenders. The separation from a contender to an average team in a Power Four conference is vast. It's gigantic. It's reason why normally we'll see a blowout when Ohio State will play Indiana in year one of Kurt Cignetti. But to my point here, Indiana showed what happens when you do it right. And when you grow and you progress and you dedicate resources, you are deliberate in trying to build a contending team. You're able to win a conference championship and win a national title, and to completely shut down any past history of failure as evidence of you not deserving to be there. Were there questions from SEC folks on if they belonged in the playoff in the first year? Were there questions of if they were capable of winning a national title this past year? Absolutely. But they still proved everybody wrong. Why would you not look at that example and realize, you know what? First of all, we have a good thing going with 12. But just because teams get in and they're in the back end of the top 25 and the same teams are in the back end of the top 25 doesn't mean those teams will ever change or improve or actually get better. Those teams always stay the same. They always fluctuate from being either in the back end of the top 25 or just missing the top 25. Go check out their win totals. There's some aberrations in there, some unexpected seasons from an Iowa, from a Northwestern, a Wisconsin. But for the most part, they're all 8-4. Every freaking year, there's a 9-3, there's a 7-5 in there. We think that those teams are suddenly going to be competitive and they're going to play for a national title. I'm so over it.
Why is Tony Petitti more worried about the diversity? Maybe that's a bad word. Why is Tony Petitti more worried about the access for every other team in college football than the access and equality and making it more competitive in his own conference? Because there is no conference right now where the top and the middle and the bottom is so far separated than any other conference. I mean, Joe, let me give an example. You do draft coverage, okay? So let's go that route. A 6-6 and 7-5 team in the SEC combined for 15 draft picks this year. One of those teams was my team. One of those teams was LSU, and they still went 7-5. Meanwhile, the middle to impact teams in the Big Ten, Joe, it is so far separated. You can ignore that fact, but it is a fact. The reason that you can say that there are top-end teams in the SEC from the decades of when Saban ruled, you can say that now with the Big Ten, but you can't argue the fact that you have a more competitive balance in one league versus the other, and Tony Petitti is more worried about everybody else than making his conference there. He's trying to do that by getting them more money, thinking that that would propel them. And it won't. Nevertheless, we're live. Everyone do us a favor by hitting the like and share. Share to all those groups. If you're on Facebook, we're not on Facebook because of my stupidity. But do us a favor. Share the link from YouTube over to Facebook. We greatly appreciate it. Share to all those groups. If you're on YouTube, do us a favor. Subscribe down below. If you're on the 24/7 Sports Twitter page, hit that retweet button as well. We greatly, greatly appreciate you doing that. Also, we need to talk about our good friends and partners over at CBS and 24/7 Sports. Joe, we've been hearing, little birdie told me today, that a lot of you have been going over there and subbing to your favorite team's 24/7 page by using the promo code ARJ60 at checkout. Go get you an annual VIP membership today and use that promo code. Look, we got a lot of recruiting. It doesn't matter what team that you follow or you love or you cover. Recruiting is picking up right now. Go over to your favorite team site today. Use that promo code RJ60 at checkout to get 60% off of your order today. All right, let's get moving here. Joe, Phillip Hayes, the attorney, it is now widely reported that Phillip Hayes, who was going to be the judge in the Brendan Sorsby versus NCAA case, today has recused himself. Joe, I normally let you kick this off, but man, I got to start off with this one because today he is recusing himself. In case you missed it, Sorsby sued the NCAA in a Lubbock court. And you know what's so crazy to me? We talked about this on Monday. It is political suicide for any judge that touches this. Any single judge. And the conversation that you and I had was a simple one. Why would any elected official in Lubbock County want to touch this? It's a lose-lose situation. You have Lubbock County that obviously is going to have a vast amount of Texas Tech fans. So if you rule not in the favor of Brendan Sorsby, you're looked at as a complete dud. God knows you probably won't win re-election. But nationally, if you do favor in his defense, then nationally, you're looked like as a pushover and that you did Texas Tech a favor by and completely ignoring facts and giving Brendan Sorsby eligibility. Joe, this is going to get nasty because the judge that's going to touch this is going to have, excuse my French here, a massive set of brass balls because, of course, this was going to get political. It's a lose-lose situation for any judge that's going to touch this. And I just don't know why anybody would want to do it. But Phillip Hayes has recused himself after allegations coming out of him being a big Texas Tech alum. Joe, what are your thoughts on Hayes recusing himself as this continues to be a hot topic of conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I called it. I called it in the segment. You did a great job leading all that in, but I called it on Monday. Well, I said that ethically, there would be no reason for Hayes to get involved. This to me was very different than the situations with the eligibility cases because there was a lot of fluidity to the definition of eligibility. No one also, there are no legal issues that surround athletic eligibility. There's none. But because this is a gambling situation and that the gaming commissions in Indiana and Ohio are also, this is something that's forgotten with this. They're also conducting their own investigations, not just the NCAA. So there are potentially legal ramifications on the table here. I don't know what's going to happen with that.
It should be federal because it's across state lines. When you start having situations across state lines, it should be federal because now it's not just those two states. He's filing it in Lubbock, which is in Texas. Joe, you have three states. You can't, this has got to go federal, but I'm sorry for interrupting, but it's going to have to.
I don't have a legal background. You would know more than I would for your previous career before.
Normally, when people commit crimes in multiple states, it goes federal, a lot like the Michigan situation when it started crossing county lines and state lines.
I'd imagine part of – I feel as though when you get situations like this, especially when you have someone as notable as Brendan Sorsby and how notable he's become, I feel like the – defense that they're building that he had a gambling addiction and the fact that he went to treatment for it is probably going to help him get out of any serious charges. I don't know how
he's not going to see charges. He's not.
Yeah, I don't think that will happen. But to get back to Phillip Hayes, as soon as those pictures started surfacing of him at events and standing next to the mascot, all I could think about was, man, there's just no way that this guy is going to stick because if, as you said, if he is the sitting judge and he rules against Sorsby in Lubbock County, all the Texas Tech fans are going to be extremely upset with that result. The inverse of that is if he goes in favor of him, there's going to be a huge question of ethics. So there was no way that he was going to sit and take this. He has 2 degrees from Texas Tech. And apparently they're now going to try and find a judge that does not have Texas Tech ties, which I don't know how hard that's going to be. I feel like it'd be a little bit easier because Texas is so big compared to like a state like Mississippi, where they're either a judge from Mississippi or from Ole Miss or from Mississippi State. I feel like that this was inevitable, and good on Philip Hayes. I'll say this is my last bit here. Good on him for having enough self-awareness to not get himself entrenched with this, because a lot of people were laughing about the comments that Sorsby had where he said that he was trying to feel closer to his team. People were laughing about the pictures of Philip Hayes, again, being pictured at these events. This seemed like an inevitable outcome. Whichever judge does get this is going to be under immense scrutiny, no matter what.
If it's a judge that has been elected in Lubbock County, and normally how these things work, it's by county. Mm-hmm. Joe, it's political suicide if that is your district. Like, I don't care what you tell me. It is political suicide. You cannot rule... Joe, that's like a judge in South Bend, Indiana, ruling against Notre Dame. That's like a sitting Baton Rouge City judge in the 22nd Judicial.
That's probably a better example. Well, South Bend's not like, but okay. Not to down again to get the semantics, but
you get right. what I'm saying. It's political suicide. You can't do that. Now, it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. Understand something. When you recuse yourself, the times and dates set up for judges that you would specifically want. Court cases and court dates are set based off of a calendar of when a judge would have a hearing. As this is going to continue to go on, whoever's going to see this, if it is a state judge, an elected official, they are going to have brass balls. Because is Philip Hayes recusing himself? Does it surprise anybody? Like, it doesn't surprise me. If anything, it vindicates what I think both of us were trying to come at and saying, if you rule in the favor of him, you look like a klutz. Mm-hmm. And then if you rule against him, you look like a klutz, because you're not going to get real. You talked about self-awareness there. Yeah. If the man played Madden, Philip Hayes' awareness would be 1,000 instead of 99. Because you can't win there, Joe. You simply can't win. They got to make a precedent out of this. Some of the statements that are coming out of Sorsby are absolutely ridiculous. They're ridiculous. Yeah. The truth of the matter is that this crossed state lines. This is not trying to be political. The Federal Bureau of Investigation should take over any investigation that's going on here. A federal court system has got to take over here. This is not like how you are allowing and how they are allowing for this to play out in state court, if they allow it to play out in state court, is a joke. Because, Joe, like, I mean, that is criminology 101. This isn't something that, like, somebody with experience that I have or any – this is basic 101 stuff. When stuff starts crossing state lines, it gets taken over federally. With that part being said, look, he needs to shut his mouth. He needs to be quiet. He needs to zip it. Because every time that Brendan Sorsby opens his mouth, the hole keeps getting bigger and bigger. You weren't gambling at Indiana to feel closer with your teammates. Stop. Stop. And Jeffrey Kessler, for that matter, allowing that quote to go out there is dumb.
Well, it was a part of the affidavit, if I recall. This was deliberate.
He writes the affidavit. So
this is deliberate. So this is a part of their defense, which is why I don't understand. Kessler's a great attorney, obviously, because he's handled these situations before. And we talked about once it was announced that he was going to be representing him, I brought up that his experience in this realm, they were going to try and pull whatever to be able to make this thing work. They were going to try and go from whatever direction that they could in order to see if there was some survivability. I think a lot of people recognize that there's a very low probability of this working. So you do need to make some pretty ridiculous claims. I give Kessler some credit that this is creative, but I don't think anyone's dumb enough to believe that was a real reason. I'm willing to believe the gambling addiction aspect of it. I think it was smart to put out there some of the things that he was betting on, because it came out he was betting on like random countries, ping pong tournaments, the Oscar Mayer wiener race. I admittedly placed a bet on that. So
hot dog, the hot dog eating contest. Yeah. Oh my God.
I've bet on those things, but they should have just put that out. I don't think that they should tie any quotes. I don't really get that idea, because the more that we get to talk about Sorsby, the more that he is getting criticized, not us, just the general public. Go look on social media, read the comments of our videos. People are like really trashing the kid. And I think that they need to stop putting quotes out. Stop, just put out the information and take this thing to court. But I don't even know if they'll be able to get to court.
No,
if judges are going to continue to step down.
Well, that would be a smart play by all of them. You can't rule on something you don't want to hear on and say I have personal ties. What judge in Lubbock County doesn't have Texas Tech ties?
I feel like there might be someone.
No, there's not. You ran in Lubbock County. You ran in Lubbock County.
We're not privy to dynamics of the legal system in Lubbock.
Let me give you just a little bit of an analogy. These judges and politicians raise money. It is easy to find campaign finance reports. And what if we see that three boosters from Texas Tech gave contributions to a judge? That alone is reason to recuse yourself. No, it's
right. And I'm sure that's probably going to lead to more judges stepping away. I wonder if they could call in somebody from a different district. I don't know how these things work.
They can. Again, extreme circumstances. And this is an extreme circumstance, but I think they're going to try to play this and hold this out as long as they can. So we'll see what they will ultimately do. The last thing that I'd say on Sorsby is, Joe, what are you like? Why are you releasing the things you gambled on? Why are you acknowledging it?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because to me, you're trying to paint the picture that like, hey, I was just spending money on placing bets to do it because I wanted the rush of it. That I'm fine with.
My grandfather, God bless his soul, before he passed, had a saying. For a living, talk all the time. A steel tongue keeps a wise head. You are innocent until proven guilty. Okay? The reason that Miranda's rights are written to you and stated to you, you have the right to remain silent when you're arrested, is because anything can and will be used against you in a court of law. But in a court of public opinion, you're guilty of sin. You're guilty of sin. And so regardless of whatever happens to him, the general public is not going to buy your bullshit. They're not going to buy it. No one can convince me, with all due respect, that the only time that he ever betted on or against his team was when he was a true freshman. If your place, and this is why I have a problem with the hot dog eating contest bet place. So you did it in Indiana to feel closer to your team. Yeah, sounds good. Joe, what else would we discover if this got prolonged? Another reason why I think everybody is focused in on of the immediacy on them wanting to do this for the supplemental draft. That is true. You know why else they're doing it? Because it doesn't give the NCAA and it doesn't give any attorneys the right for the NCAA to be able to gather evidence, to be able to come back. Like, what if they're able to find in an investigation 2 months from now that he did it at Cincinnati?
Well, this is all why I don't think that it's plausible that the NCAA is going to be able to expedite this thing, because it requires a lot of work and also cooperation with the gaming commissions in Indiana and Ohio. And whatever other entities that might be involved with conducting. So there's just a lot that we don't know. And I think that
that's true.
Are not really being given the proper context. We're being told a lot of things, but it feels as though that there's a lot of information missing.
If he is found and cleared of the charges, if Major League Baseball immediately doesn't induct Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose it, because that has been your argument for a long time. This is getting, Joe, you know, it's funny, very quickly. Every year you and I get to pretty much close to the end of the offseason, and I've said I've had enough. I'm at my wit's end. I've had enough.
Yeah. Yep.
This is getting ridiculous. So this is what it is there. All right. Joe, on Monday, we were supposed to get to a South Carolina deep dive. I completely butchered that. That is my fault. But tonight, we will get to the great state of South Carolina and talk about the South Carolina Gamecocks going into the 2026 season. Joe, this team is very interesting to me when I look at them. Kendall Briles is now the offensive coordinator under Shane Beamer, I think, every year, and they have had sustained success defensively. But the big question coming out of South Carolina, Lenore Sellers, Kendall Briles, what can you make of it? What are your thoughts of South Carolina going into 2026?
Blake, South Carolina was unexpectedly, the way that they played last year was kind of shocking. I would have thought at the very least that South Carolina would have remained competitive, that they would have been a middle of the pack team, maybe an 8-4 team. For them to have collapsed as aggressively as they did, it was completely out of nowhere. But there are a lot of things that I think that need to go right. But I do think that South Carolina has the capability to get back up towards the top of the conference. I have been incredibly critical of Shane Beamer. And I think a lot of their problems and inconsistencies come from Beamer himself. But we're not going to sit here and talk about Beamer. We're going to sit here and talk about, as you mentioned, the hiring of Briles, who is a great play caller and who has worked with guys like Lenore Sellers with their skill sets and gotten the most out of them. And we're going to focus on the fact that this roster does have a lot of really talented players. 10 returning starters. They have a lot of returning production from last year. A lot of returning guys. It's not just Sellers. Nick Harbor, albeit he needs to continue to grow and to improve and to be less of a track star and more of a consistent football player, he needs to get that 9.1 drop rate down, which is a real rough number. His hands are really inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Their defense, their linebacker room, their secondary has got a lot of really good experienced players. And not to mention the fact that they arguably have the most physically talented pass rusher in all of college football in Dylan Stewart. If we're just being direct with Lenora Sellers and Dylan Stewart, they have two of the most talented players physically in the country on their roster, which is why it was so unexpected that they were as bad as they were a year ago. Blake, at a certain point, it feels like when you have dudes like this on your team, you can catch some sort of wave, some sort of momentum. You can go on a run. You can knock off teams that you're not supposed to beat, just like they did 2 years ago. But there's just too much volatility for me to speak too confidently, Blake, and them actually bouncing back this upcoming season.
Jakarius Peak was the big portal addition that they had this offseason. And in February, he had a significant knee injury, was playing basketball, got hurt, extremely unfortunate. So because you have February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, Can he come back? Is he going to be conditioned in the eighth, ninth month mark? We don't know. We legitimately don't know. So I'm going to act as if in this one that he's not here to start the season. Because, again, you just don't know. But you brought in Poku. You brought in Miller along your offensive line. You brought in Seth Smith. You brought in Hank Purvis. You brought in a lot of offensive linemen because the truth of it was, yet again, you struggled in recruiting and developing along your offensive line. So they couldn't run the football. And you were asking Lenora Sellers to throw the football to win you games on a wide receiver core who had his brother, with all due respect, Nick Harbor, that's not great at running routes. And I know that you had to go out there and get Gibson. You had to go out there and get Nitro Toggle. And Joe, I don't know what they are going to be offensively. But I know Kendall Briles is a pretty damn good play caller. And I know that when he has a dynamic quarterback that can run and throw the football, Joe, they find ways. And he is one of, I would say, and I'm being, you know, very conservative because I don't really want to get in the debate with people in the comments. He's a top 10 offensive coordinator in the country. And I don't, and I think he's more of maybe in the top eight than anything. He just doesn't get the credit. What is that addition with the offensive line, new additions at wide receiver, and with Lenora Sellers in this run game, what can Kendall Briles get out of all of them? This is the third offensive coordinator that Lenora Sellers has had in 3 years. So when we look at Lenora Sellers, we look at the physical freak from 2 years ago who broke so many tackles and made plays versus A&M, Bama, Ole Miss, Clemson, you name it, and you see the ability. But, Joe, this is his third offense in 3 years. And that's difficult for any damn body. You've seen Hall of Fame quarterbacks in the NFL that have had trajectories like that and had those situations. Like Brady even said this on his own podcast, by the way, like a month ago. The struggles that I had in my career was when all of the guys in New England started to get hired somewhere else to be head coaches. When my offensive guys left and you're learning a new system, then Bill said, no, we're going to put in our system and coaches have to learn it. It's even tough for that guy. So there are a lot of things that you have to overcome here. Defensively, what in losing Sterling Lucas is one of your big defensive line coaches to LSU, what is that going to do? But this is the year for Dylan Stewart. They have done a very good job at developing and identifying talent defensively. How Kilgore is back, I have no idea. I think that Kilgore is back.
No, he got drafted by the Bills. He got drafted. Jalen Kilgore got drafted. Maybe we mix him up with Judge Collier, maybe?
I think I'm pretty sure I mixed him up with Collier. Regardless, the safety room, whether it be Kilgore, Emmanuel, they have been phenomenal. Now, you go out and you get Scott. You have a lot of production in your front seven. You have the biggest and freakiest dude at edge. What is Troy Pikes able to do for you? And you got some other guys in the interior of your defensive line.
Gerald Kilgore is their projected starting free safety, not Jalen Kilgore. That was why.
Okay.
Jalen Kilgore was the talented player. Gerald's a different player.
It doesn't matter. You put in one Kilgore for another. One Kilgore for another. They're the same exact player. You can't tell me otherwise. And they still wear a single digit. Joe, they've done regardless, they have done a really good job defensively. And defensively last year, Joe, do you remember we were having conversations about South Carolina in the middle of the season last year? And we're like, Joe, they're top 30 in defense. What is going on? Offensively, they were just horrendous. Again, bottom line for them, I don't know what to expect. You got the freakiest athletes all across the board. If you put Nick Harbor, Lenora Sellers, peak when he is at full go, and Dylan Stewart, there is no freakier of athletes. Can they live up to that production? Now, I will say this too, Joe. Dylan Stewart is probably the most freakiest edge guy maybe in the country or whatever you want to say. He got hurt last year and couldn't sustain. He had 4.5 sacks. He was still very explosive. Can he live up to the explosiveness that he did as a freshman? And can he finally get to that double-digit sack mark that he is trying to get to? And if he does, man, they're going to be fine. We will talk about their schedule when we get there to it in just a moment. I just don't know what to make of them. Because if your offensive line, if you miss there again, and you missed at wide receiver again, and you're just expecting Lenore Sellers to continue to go off without a guy like Rocket Sanders next to him, I don't know if Kendall Briles can save you there either. So they have the talent. It's just I never know what to expect with them. But they got dudes, and they're freaky athletic all across the board.
Yeah, they have been really successful at recruiting. They've got a lot of four-star guys on this roster. One of the best parts about 24/7 Sports that you always use before our partnership is if you click on their roster on the team pages, I'm on Gamecock 247, it has the star ratings of these guys. So we know that Dylan Stewart was a five-star. We know Nick Harbor was a five-star. They have the pedigree of these four stars just across the board, and especially defensively. So defensively, I feel like I know what to expect. But you brought up the most important aspect in what will this offensive line be. If Jacarius Peak plays, he was one of the top portal offensive linemen. And I really liked his tape. When I watched him, when we were talking about a while ago, we were talking about like top portal additions, I was really intrigued by what he brought to the table because he's pretty smooth. He's pretty fluid. The injury that he suffered is really frustrating. One of the articles I was reading on Gamecock 24/7 indicated that his recovery is going better than expected. But what does that mean? We're never going to get real clarity with injury recovery in college football because there's no injury reports. And a guy as important as Peak, they're going to drag that out as much as possible. And the thing that sucks is he was a guy who had tools that could have benefited from a little bit more physical growth. Not having him for theoretically most of training camp and part of the season could kind of hurt the offensive line. I have some hope, though, that this offensive line is going to play better because two of their returning starters that were on the offensive line were two young guys, one of which struggled, but these two young guys have a very high recruiting background. Josiah Thompson was a former five-star, and in his first real contributions with this team, he gave up 33 pressures. He gave up 7 sacks. That led the team in both categories. Shed Surratt was a former 4-star at guard. He only gave up 11 pressures and 2 sacks. So he was a little bit more steady. I think that the reshaping of this offensive line was something that they definitely needed to do. And I'm holding out hope that those two guys that were highly recruited players that weren't transfer portal additions will step up to the plate and they will progress. But the last part for me, Blake, that I got to see, this is something that actually shocked me. The thing that we talked very highly of, ask anybody about Lenore Sellers and ask them, what does he do best? And they will tell you he is incredibly talented at powering through tackles and completely preventing anybody from sacking him. He's too strong in the pocket. Well, last year, after the tremendous first season that he had, in 2025, he had the 5th worst pressure to sack ratio in all of college football. And that means every single time he saw pressure, it led to a sack. He was sacked 40 times last year. He has to get back to where he was because even if the offensive line improves, his best trait was he was Superman back there. I don't know what changed. He was so freaking strong in the pocket. And now all of a sudden it wasn't as easy.
Well, if you remember, he got concussed early in the year last year. I do think it derailed him. Offensively, and I hate to say it like this, offensively, play calling wise, they sucked. And they put him in bad situations. So they're asking this dude to do 6, 5, and 7 step drops and throw to Nick Harbor. And I do think teams got a little bit better at containing him. What do I mean? instead of passing him, just collapsing the pocket on him and trying to muddy up the water to make sure he gets tripped up. I mean, they did a lot better of a job getting to him. But I do think Kendall Browse makes this very interesting for me. Look, the misdirection and some of the things that he does, do they allow him to go up tempo? That's the real question. I mean, look, you know, like Lane said this, that he didn't do this until the Browse, you know, he didn't go do hurry up stuff until Browse and company started implementing it for him. It will be interesting to see how he utilizes him. With all due respect, if you're not letting him run the football 14 to 15 times a game, then you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You're asking a bulldozer to plow a bonsai tree when you can be plowing regular trees. I mean, like, you got to utilize him the right way. And this is the thing. Nobody is more equipped that South Carolina has had to utilize his skill set better than Kendall Browse. I do worry about them at receiver. And I wonder how Nick Harbor's route running ability does take flight. But, I mean, Joe, are you asking him? You're not asking a Ferrari to run a hitch route. You're asking a Ferrari to go as fast as he can north and south. And so they have weapons. They have athletes. And that's why, like, I think about Florida from a year ago, right? Florida had dudes all over the place, all over the place. And I'm not saying that's what South Carolina is, but yo, they got dudes all over the place. I just don't know if they know how to put them in the right position. The run game for Lenora Sellers, I think the running back room holistically, that's the room that's got to take the pressure off of him, to take the pressure off of the passing game offensively so that he doesn't have to always be Superman too. And the last thing I'd say, Kendall Browse has been elite over the last decade of utilizing the short pass game to get guys in rhythm, but to stay ahead of the sticks. And I think that's something that Lenora Sellers had in 24 that offensively last year that they wouldn't allow him to do.
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit more diversity in the receiver room. I like them going and getting Nitro Tuggle. I think that there's been some hype on DJ Black when I was reading some of the reports on Gamecock 24/7 from the spring. DJ Black is kind of interesting to pay attention to. And Jaden Sellers as a freshman was solid. I remember there were a bunch of instances last year where he made a couple of big plays and he was impactful.
Yeah.
For a true freshman, it's pretty good. He's also got a rapport with the quarterback because it's his brother. I agree with you on the running back aspect of this because it's felt like, in general, when South Carolina has been at its best, it's had a reliable go-to running back
that no they doubt
lean on. And they didn't, even when they had Raheem Sanders, when Raheem Sanders was kind of a shell of himself and it felt like he wasn't at full speed, the year that South Carolina was really good, it was because they at least could rely on Raheem Sanders to pick up a big play. I don't know who that guy is. You know, can Matt Fuller step up? Can Isaiah Gustav, who was a transfer who I've spoken highly of multiple times, I was excited about him when he was a recruit. When he was at Colorado, he was doing some pretty good things as well. And then he abruptly transferred to South Carolina, and I thought that he would emerge, but it didn't really come to fruition. Right. Yeah, someone has to step up in the run game. Do you want me to read through their schedule here?
I do. Let's get to it.
All right. Their upcoming schedule should be wins. I've got Kent State, Towson. And, dude, I really think Arkansas is going to be ass this year. I really think that Arkansas – we're not going to do an Arkansas preview. I'm telling you guys right now. Go look at that roster. That's a bad roster. That's a should-be win. Tough matchups, games that they – theoretically, I'm kind of reframing this based on how we previously did it. Games that they should be able to win, but there's a higher, like a stronger probability that they lose. Versus Mississippi State, I don't think it's a gimme, as we did the Mississippi State preview. Versus Kentucky, we did that preview, which is getting a lot of views from the Kentucky fans. That team's better than expected. At Florida, I mean, I would actually maybe even put that into a probable loss category because it's in the swamp. I'm putting that in
a probable loss.
Versus Tennessee, you get them at home, which you've beaten them at home before in bigger moments, and then you go to Clemson. The toss-up games slash probable losses, which are games that are winnable, but you're probably not going to win them. Most of these aren't even really winnable. All of these are probable losses. At Alabama, at Oklahoma, versus Texas A&M, versus Georgia. If you're capable of surviving that middle group of the schedule, the tough matchups category, I mean, you could go 7-5. But here's the thing, though, Blake. If Lenoris Sellers, if the offensive line's a little bit better and Dylan Stewart's back fully healthy and plays really well and he wreaks havoc on the SEC, we're talking about a top five defensive player in the country when he's healthy. And this isn't like, oh, he's got a bad injury history. What are you talking about? When he's healthy and if he's not dealing with the back issue, I believe what it was, that was holding him back last year, he's good enough to change and alter a game. And Lenoris Sellers has the talent to completely alter the outcome of a game as well. So as much as these games sound improbable, they've shocked us before.
I just don't know. Like, at Bama, at Florida, at Oklahoma, then you have Georgia and Texas A&M. Here's where I am. We were supposed to do this on Monday. Here's where I am. How good's Lenoris Sellers? Because here's the truth. If Lenoris Sellers is what I think he can be, he can single-handedly by himself beat any of those teams. Georgia included. You know, Kirby was at a coaching conference about 2 months ago. And he had on the big projector screen Johnny Manziel, Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels, Cam Newton. And he said, hey, what do all of these guys have in common? And people said, Jalen Hurts was on there too, by the way, Tua Tagovailoa. And he said, what do all these quarterbacks have in common? And somebody in the crowd said, they all won Heismans. Okay, well, not all of them did because Jalen Hurts and Tua didn't. And he said, no. All of them were elite athletes and went off on my defense. If Lenoris Sellers is that special, he can propel you to beat any team on that roster or on that schedule. Excuse me. I still don't think he's got enough around him, Joe. And so for that, I think that they can be an 8-4 team is where I'd have them. I think they're talented enough to be 8-4. I just don't know if they can supersede that. Like, I got to see more. If Kendall Briles is what he can be, I can see him getting to 9-3. I just don't see him above 8-4 right now, and that's where I have him.
8-4 does feel like a ceiling. Maybe we get stunned. I just can't imagine them going 5-7 again, though. Like, I don't see that coming to fruition.
They're too talented.
If they go 5-7, Beamer's getting fired. I think if they go 6-6, I think that there might be some questions.
Yeah, Beamer's going to hate that he didn't take that Virginia Tech job.
Was he actually in consideration?
No, it seems as if that as soon as Penn State fired your boy, he was the top target. So, yeah, I'm with you. I guess we'll see. And what can South Carolina do? I don't know. All right, Joe, before we get out of here,
We got a minute. I don't know if we're gonna get the two super chats. I don't know. We can punt on that. I don't think we need to get to that.
All right, sounds good. All right, so two super chats. Buck says, get on a stream with my brother Chris Drew. I have no idea who that is. He says, I'll set it up. Zach and Chris versus Blake and Joe. Is that the guys that clipped us?
The guy who tweeted about us was different from the guy who talked about us in his video. And Menace to Sports is Zach Smith, the former Ohio State coach that got fired for the...
So the guy that allegedly beat on his wife wants to debate us.
But it's like his co-host that was the one who clipped us. So I don't know. I'm kind of... Because what are we debating him on? What are we debating him on?
Yeah, so in reference to that guy... I have no respect for you. Zero. Sorry, you Ohio State fans. Well, no, you can get mad at it, but I'm just going to be quite honest with you. Those things aren't alleged. And so I ain't got time. Why would you allow somebody like that to have a platform?
Well, it's YouTube. Anyone can.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, those things aren't alleged.
Yeah, he went to jail for it.
Went to jail for it. So
I think he did.
No, he went to, he got arrested. He was arrested multiple times. I'm not entertaining Rudy Poos like that. Sorry, you Ohio State fans. I'm not. Mm-mm. I've gone on a lot of debates with a lot of people on a lot of shows. Not losers like that. So, all right. We're out of here. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.